This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode available each and every week. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I'm going to be your host for this special episode of the Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. This time, we're going to talk about a film called Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. Now, if you don't know who Gloria Graham is, she's an actress from classic films in the 40s and 50s and 60s who came into great fame with movies like It's a Wonderful Life and The Big Heat and In a Lonely Place. And she also won an Oscar for The Bad and the Beautiful. What Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool is concerned with is the later years of her life. Gloria Graham is played by Annette Bening. And the film revolves around her realizing that she is ill and contacting her former love in Peter Turner, who's played by Jamie Bell, to see if she can go and spend time with him and recuperate with Peter and his family, who she greatly admires. Of course, his love for her has never really waned. Their friendship has never really waned. So Peter and his family take her in. And in those days, as Peter realizes that her health is waning, he reflects upon the time that he knew her before, when he met her. He fell in love with her before he even knew she was a huge actress and a star. And the film follows that relationship and tells you what happened in the past and what created the bond that kept their relationship together. It's a film that I thought was going to be very, very different than what it was. I really thought it was going to be, here's a Hollywood actress and we're seeing her final days. And instead what I got was a warm and touching love story between Peter and Gloria. Annette Bening, you already know she's a fantastic actress, but she really just takes this role to a different place here. Jamie Bell is an actor I've touted for a long time. He just had a movie earlier this year called 6 Days. Highly recommend you see that one as well. Jamie Bell is a very rounded actor who can tackle very different aspects of parts, and here he gets to run a gamut of emotions as Peter. The film will open in L.A. and New York on Friday, December 29th, 2017, and then I believe it will roll out after that. So keep an eye on that. The film, once again, is called Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. Now, for this exclusive interview, I'm basically going to bring it to you in two parts. Part one, we're going to talk to Peter Turner himself, the man who wrote the book Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, and then, 30-plus years later, sees that book brought to the big screen. He sees his love story. His own love story brought to the big screen. And we talked to Peter about that love story, that romance, what it's like seeing himself on film, what it's like seeing Annette Bening's performance of his former love on screen, and what he thinks of the film overall. It's a very, very sweet and charming interview. Very nice guy. I think you're going to really enjoy that. And part two, we're talking to director Paul McGugin. Paul is a very talented director. He's worked on a lot of things you probably already know. He directed Lucky Number 11, Wicker Park. He's done several episodes of Sherlock, Luke Cage, Designated Survivor pilot. I love that pilot. And also Victor Frankenstein. I think that movie's a blast. But this film is much more serious in nature. It's a much more heartfelt drama. It's a love story. It's very touching. It's unlike some of his more genre-related works that he's done before. It was very interesting to talk to him and see where he was coming from in terms of why he wanted to do this film, what it was like working with Annette Bening and Jamie Bell and Peter Turner, and having the actual person who's behind the story you're telling there to make sure you get it right. It's a really interesting and insightful interview. Great guy to talk to. Both Peter and Paul took time out of the craziness of their film promotion junket just to give us a call and talk to us about the film. And I definitely hope that inspires you to find the film and see a love story that I really hope most of you have in your own lives someday. It's a beautiful tale. And now take a listen to part two of our two-part series on Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool as we talk to director Paul McGugin about his film, what he thought about making the story, why it was a story he needed to tell, what it was like working with Annette Bening and Jamie Bell, and what it is like to make a film where the inspiration is readily available to you. Here's the director of Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, Paul McGugin.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How's everything going at the junket?
Yeah, we were just talking about that. It's a little bit intense, right? But it's good. It's nice.
That is good. So first thing I ask anybody I talk to is, when did you know you wanted to be a filmmaker? Was there a specific moment, or is it a lifelong dream?
Well, I was a photographer before I became a filmmaker, so that was my kind of main vocation in life, you know? And then I just got offered a short film, really, by Evan Welsh, who had just done Trainspotting, so... And it was through actually making the short film that I kind of got really excited about it and kind of obsessed about making film, you know. It was through the actual making of it, which just sounds strange, but I'd never went to film school or anything, so.
And now you've got a pretty eclectic body of work. You've got Lucky Number 11, numerous episodes of Sherlock, Victor Frankenstein, yeah. Which I was a big fan of. I had a lot of fun with that movie. So you're an accomplished director in several different genres. So what was it about this particular story that you had to tell?
I really liked the book as well as the script. You know, it was great. We had both the screenplay and the book to reference. And I loved the way that Pierre Turner wrote his memory of his relationship with Gloria Graham. I thought it was quite cinematic in its format, you know, the way that the memories become very fluid and the love story therefore became very fluid as well, and it jumped between the timelines, and I thought that was really interesting. So I was really quite determined to tell it like that, you know. And it was just such a great book about the effects of how one human can affect another and how it's everlasting, you know, and how love can be as powerful as that. And I just thought it was very interesting and quite simple story to tell, you know, and I really enjoyed that part of it.
Walking into the film, I originally thought it was going to be more about an aging actress kind of coming to terms with mortality based on the description. Yeah. And you find the sweet and loving story at its core. So how difficult was that for you as a director to navigate kind of that duality of the stories being told?
You know, it was interesting because, you know, it was based on Peter's life story, so we kind of went with the point of view from Pierre Turner, you know. Mm-hmm. and it was his point of view of meeting this very enigmatic woman who was older than him and who seemed a very exotic in a way, you know, both in her demeanor and who she was. And these were the days before the internet, and, you know, it's not like you could look her up on the Google like we do
right
every day, you know. So it was, I thought that was interesting, and so therefore, you know, it wasn't a biography of Gloria Graham by any means. It's very much a story about Pierre Turner and Gloria Graham, and through that I was hoping that the audience will be able to navigate their way back to Gloria's work when they get out of the cinema. They actually can Google her, you know, and hopefully go and check her film out and her work out, you know. It was kind of interesting.
Do you feel like as film goers, people aren't really as appreciative of classic icons like Gloria in this day and age?
I don't know if it's been appreciative of, or if they just don't know about them, you know, because, you know, as you know better than anyone, I mean, the back in the day, you know, these film stars were much more private and much, you know, they weren't under the scrutiny as much as they are now, you know. Everything that they do, every meal they take now, that seems to be reported somewhere along the line, you know. So there was less scrutiny to them there, and they were much more exotic creatures in a way. And so I think it's more about that. It's more about the kind of nature of how we report things now, I think. Because I actually think that when people do look at Gloria's work, they will see a woman who's very ahead of her time in a sense, you know, and her kind of modernity of characters she was playing, and strong female roles that she played, and played with wit and kind of attitude. And it's hard to say, isn't it? Because, you know, it's interesting because the BFI in London are now playing a retrospective of Gloria's work. Mm. And, you know, you could actually go and see an original 35mm print of In a Lonely Place, which is a wonderful experience, you know. And then also you're watching it on film as well, and there's just something about it. You go, oh my God, I've kind of missed this. I've missed watching a film on film. You know, I've missed watching these film stars, you know, beautifully lit and just, you know. And so we wanted to sort of bring elements of that into our storytelling as well.
Well, I read that Annette was the first choice for Gloria, and apparently she's been fascinated by her for years. Does that make a smoother process for you to have your lead actress already so invested in the role?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about this today about, you know, without wanting to sound like filmmaking simple, but in a way, this process of casting was the easiest casting process I've ever experienced as a filmmaker, because normally casting can be, as you can imagine, quite brought, you know, trying to get actors and trying to get them committed to something and schedules and all that kind of stuff. But because because Gloria was already invested in the film, and I was just a matter of me going to meet her and seeing that we're both on the same page. And then Jamie Bell was someone that I always wanted to work with, and I didn't know Jamie, but I met him on the same visit out to LA to meet Annette, and I left LA with both my two lead actors, you know, which doesn't happen very often. So, and then once you do get Annette Bening, it helps a lot to attract other actors of a certain quality, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Did her research bring any deeper understanding for you as a director, or were you already pretty invested in the character?
Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, she actually put me to shame sometimes. I would wander in, and she had post-it notes all over the book and over the script, and she would ask, have questions for Peter Turner a lot, and her questions were very private questions between her and Peter. You know, they had a kind of pact where he would ask her very personal stuff about Gloria. And I guess for Annette, you know, like all filmmakers were curious people, and she just wanted to understand her character a lot more, you know, so she was going into a lot more depth than I probably had to go into, because she just really wanted to invest herself with information that she could use as a kind of overall arc of getting to know who the character was, whereas I was more invested in the story that we had to tell, you know. So there's always that interesting dynamic that happens between actors and directors, that sometimes and quite often that actors have got much more information about their characters than perhaps you as a director even have, because that's what they deal with, you know, is that one character. Whereas as a director, you're dealing with everybody and storytelling and the actual process of making it. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting, you know. But she's such a student of character in it, you know. She's just wonderful at it, and it's a great example for anyone to watch how she works.
And I'm glad you brought up Jamie Bell. He's one of those actors that he needs like a bigger canvas than he's gotten. Yeah. I just saw 6 Days. He did that earlier this year. Great movie.
Oh, yeah. The one about the siege. And
yes. He just did a really solid job in that. So what about him convinced you he was your perfect Peter?
Well, you know, Peter comes from Liverpool, which is a very working-class town, really. He's from a working-class family. He had a very strong family background. He was an actor who, you know, being an actor in Liverpool is not an easy thing, especially those days, you know, being a male actor to try to sort of be seen with all these very macho men around him. So in a way, I felt like Jamie had some sort of shared experiences of his life experiences, the same as Peter had, you know. Jamie comes from the north of England. He's from a very working class background. He wanted to be an actor from a very young age. He was a dancer. So he had all those kind of peer pressure moments as well. And I just felt that, and also I just thought, like you just said, I mean, I just felt like he's an actor that has in a way been underused a little bit, you know, for whatever reasons. And so I really wanted to work with him because I just felt that I liked, and for me, this was a role that seemed quite fresh for him, you know. So, and then just talking to him about it, he really understood it. And he's quite a sensitive guy, and he's a very intelligent man as well. So all those elements, you know, seemed to be the right package for us, you know. And as I said, it was a very simple decision in the end, really. It was made on its own, practically. You know?
I got a story question. There's a conscious effort to focus primarily on the relationship between Peter and Gloria, as it should be. But
yeah.
did you guys ever weigh the idea of incorporating more of Gloria's estranged family?
No, because Peter never really came across them that much, you know. Mm-hmm. He was just told a lot about them. I mean, he met Mom and he met the sister, but he wasn't really that involved. And to be honest with you, you know, we did have other scenes where we did have sort of crossover storylines, but in the end of the day, you know, the audience just really want to be sharing in this relationship, you know, and we kept it very intimate in that sense, you know, because there's lots more to learn about both Peter and Gloria. And Gloria, obviously, you know, she had quite a tempestuous relationship with her family and also as her husbands, her ex-husbands, you know. It was all very... it's all very dramatic, to right. say the least. So I think Gloria, and if it was interesting about the relationship that she had with Peter's family, I think that said a lot about where she felt comfortable, you know.
No, it was an interesting choice, and I kept wondering about it, but it actually made me more interested to go look at her background and her life to find those details out.
Yeah. I mean, she's such a fascinating character. She really is. Really fascinating all about her life. And it was interesting because, you know, I kept saying to everyone, look, guys, we're not making a biography here of Gloria Graham. It's like, let people go and find out and discover her themselves, you know. Because, you know, there's a few comments saying, well, do we not really want to see more of Gloria? Do we not really want to see her in her heyday or whatever? And we're all like, you know, something, you know, that's another movie, you know?
No, I like the way this came out. It was more of a love story, and that made it work. This is a more technical questions, but I'm kind of curious. You have some wonderful transitions in the movie with Peter walking through doorways into the past, very clever, instead of the more traditional 5 years earlier placard.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious, were they shot that way or was it just careful editing?
No, we shot it. I mean, there's no edits. There's no edits between those transitions. Basically what we did is we built the sets onto each other so that the camera and the actor could walk from one set to another. With a connecting tissue being a door or a hallway or something like that, you know. So the idea was basically came from Peter's book where, you know, the way he wrote the book was so fluid and I thought that was really interesting. And therefore, I really wanted the idea that, you know, the idea of memory in a cinematic context sometimes can get in the way of the memory because, you know, cinematically you always feel like you've got to establish where you are, so you've got to have an establishing shot or a wide shot or something or whatever, you know, you've just got to kind of put the audience in a place, whereas with this I just felt like that wasn't important. What was important was the feeling and to keep the idea of the love story going, you know, and how they were feeling towards each other at certain points. And so I thought that was really interesting. And so we had a bed that rotated from one room into another and a wall that rotated 180. And, you know, the actors would quite literally jump out of the bed as the camera moved away from them.
That's cool.
And there was no edits, no cuts. So then they just go around and they would get themselves dressed or, you know, behind the camera. And it was all very theatrical way, you know, of doing it. But it was really fun.
Like a stage production.
Yeah, it kind of was, you know, and I think everyone really enjoyed that. I think the crew as well got a kick from it because we were doing something very physical through the camera. Everything was through the camera. We had no green screen or anything. We did back projection. We know what I said about the sets and stuff. So it was all very old school techniques. But it was something that, in a way, I wanted to tip my hat to Gloria's past, you know, and her films of the past. So I kind of was interested in doing that. You know, I was interested in how to bring a part of Gloria's film world into the movie itself, you know.
Yeah, and you had several nods to her and her films. I think you had the rear projection shot at the beach. Were there any other nods that you wanted to try, but you just couldn't accomplish logistically?
Not really. I mean, you know, we also did, you know, some of the sets are actually based on some sets that she, you know, it's just stuff that nobody would really get. I mean, you know, I mean, they might, but, you know, it wasn't there to show off. It was just there as a kind of tipping of the heart, really. And you know, I didn't really feel like, I felt that was enough. I didn't really want to overdo it. I didn't want to overstate what we were doing there. You know, it was just really interesting for us as filmmakers to be able to translate Peter's book onto film, but also retain what's so amazingly effective about the book, you know, and affecting about the book, which is the love story and how this was a big part of his life to meet this woman who's changed his life forever, and yet, you know, he only knew her for 3 years. But, you know, I think we all share that somewhere along the line. Hopefully, we all share a person that has been very important to us, and even though we may not be with that person now, there's something that will never, it will always indelibly be with you, you know, and have changed you for whatever reason. So I think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to do something that had a commonality to everyone watching it, that they could feel, you know, attached to it in some way.
How involved was Peter?
Very involved. Very, very involved. Of course, Peter and Barbara Broccoli, being the producer, of the piece. They were great friends. They've been great friends for many, many years. And so Peter was very much involved. He was very much there in the pre-production sense of it. You know, we would go and visit him in Liverpool. He would come down and he would talk to Annette and Jamie. But then once we started, you know, he was very respectful. Once we had done all our research with him, and then he kind of took a back seat a little bit, took a step back. And it was a bit like he gave us his life story and then we gave it to him back. So when we screened the film for him, we had a private screening with himself and me and Barbara, and it was a very emotional screening, as you can imagine, watching yourself and your life in front of you. And so it was like we gave him back his story again. So it was really nice, and he's here with us now in LA, and it's fantastic for an audience, I think, to immediately have him coming on stage after a screening, and there he is, the real Peter Turner. It's kind of really interesting to watch, you know.
I think it'd be great if Jamie Bell was playing me on screen. I mean, I think it's hard to
call. I know. I keep saying that to Peter. You're so happy there's Jamie Bell. He's like very handsome and fit. And, it's like perfect.
Nothing to complain about there.
No, not at all.
True Hollywood stories, they've been told a lot. I mean, in different ways.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious if, as a director, are there any specific tropes of these kinds of films you were very conscious of avoiding as you made this one?
Sentimentality, really. Mm. To me, you know, Annette said a funny thing to me, and I wrote it down, and I occasionally kind of go back to it again, and it was, she said to me, this can't be about an old lady dying in a room, you know? And that totally rang true with me, is that whole idea of trying to avoid the pitfalls of sentimentality, try to avoid the pitfalls of, oh, woe me, I'm an older person, and, you know, you should feel sorry for me, or I'm sick and you should feel sorry for me. It was a bit like we wanted to make her strong, and at times you kind of didn't really like her even at times, you know, because you weren't sure why she was making these decisions. Mm-hmm. And so that was really interesting. And then, I mean, I think that was the major one, really, was to kind of avoid the violence coming out, you know,
and
to give Gloria the kind of dignity that she would have, if she was still alive today, I'm sure she'd be an incredibly strong woman that would have incredibly strong ideas about how she should be portrayed in the film, you know.
Well, one of the techniques you use carries a hefty emotional weight, because as the film goes on, the two perspectives of their initial breakup,
yeah,
you know, showing each where each one of them was in that particular moment, it's a really interesting way to do it, and significantly powerful moment in the film, because I was watching it not knowing exactly where this was going, and I didn't like her for a moment, and then you get the full realization and you understand exactly what was going on. Is there a heightened pressure with you to make a scene like that where you know the film is, it's kind of a linchpin for the film?
Yeah, well, actually, funny enough, that scene was never in the original script.
Oh.
And it wasn't until we all sat around and we started talking about it that we knew there was something missing. And for me, I really wanted the audience to, as you say, kind of go quite far out there with Gloria and feel like maybe we don't understand or don't even like her very much because we're the way she's treating him. And then suddenly it came to me, I said, well, why don't we just show the scene we've seen before and show from Gloria's point of view and show why she did what she did, you know, this great sacrifice she made, you know, of letting him go and letting him, you know, get away from her kind of thing. And so I thought that was an interesting day at work, you know, doing that scene twice. And I deliberately didn't even go to see what Annette was doing the first time we shot the scene, because I didn't really want to know. And then when we turned around onto Annette for the same scene again, but from her point of view, I was just blown away by what she was doing, you know. And I knew that was the right choice that we made.
Oh, definitely. It works great in the film, in the context of the film. Well, I know I got to let you go, but last question.
Thank you.
What's next for you? Are you going to do a Bond movie?
I'm going to do a Bond. I don't think I'll be doing this next one for sure, but I've enjoyed going back into the sort of world of independent films. You know, I've really enjoyed being a part of that again. You know, we went to Telluride in Toronto, and it was really nice to be with other filmmakers and talk movies and share experiences. And I think I want to do more of that, you know. But it's about finding stories to tell, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm always in the hunt for that because I don't write, so I'm at the mercy of good screenwriters, which is a good thing to be.
Well, you've done a lot of TV as of recent, and that's got a lot
of quality
storytelling in it right now.
Yeah. I mean, if TV is brilliant, I love television because it's immediate and it's quite quick and it has its own challenges. You know, I've done a lot of pilots, which are good because everyone wants it to succeed. So there's lots of goodwill there and there's lots of ideas and time that you have, much more than if you do episodic television. So I like to come in an early stage when I'm doing TV, you know, and then create it and then walk away.
And then get out quick.
Yeah, get out before it destroys itself.
Well, thanks so much, Paul, for taking time out to talk to us.
It's so lovely to talk to you. Thanks, Aaron.
There you go, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. I thought it was a great interview. Both interviews are great, so make sure you listen to both of them if you have not already. Paul McGugan and Peter Turner are wonderful guys to talk to, and it's a beautiful story. Film stars don't die in Liverpool. I can't say enough about Annette Bening and Jamie Bell and how beautiful their love story is in the film. I think you're really going to enjoy it. The ending is a beautifully constructed story where it really just punches you in the heart in a good way, in a very, very, very good way, where you understand why things happen the way that they happen. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We love when you guys take a listen to these exclusive interviews with independent filmmakers, and we try to bring you them whenever we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember that Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool will premiere in New York and LA on December 29th, 2017, and we'll roll out after that. And also remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode each and every week, and it's available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or, like I said, your favorite podcast app. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater with your special love to see Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, buy popcorn.